future is uncertain. I know this. Death is inevitable. I know this. But one thing is certain. As free men, it is our right to live unencumbered and in peace. And those times are quickly drawing to an end. And in these times, peace is certainly an illusion. And as the chains grow tighter, our ability to slip those chains increase incrementally with every passing moment. Inaction is no longer an option. It's time to raise our voices like a cacophony of thunder and lightning and tell the masters no more. And this is Nighthawk, and I say, for myself, no more. Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, because the freedom is slipping away.
Welcome once again, ladies and gentlemen, to another edition of The Story Behind the Story. Oh, we got a good one for you here this week. Again, I apologize for my absence last week. I was heading down from, I thought I had plenty of time to get home, get on the show, down the canyon, an absolute incredible accident. Lady pulled out right in front of Smashton. I mean, it's just... We had a problem stopping. No accident. I mean, no fender bender, but it was slow going. Didn't get home in time enough to do the show. So thanks, Kevin and James, for filling in. So, yeah, I'm here live 5x5. Kevin, how are you doing tonight?
Great, true. I understand you're in a special place right now.
Oh, you should be here. Are you still stateside?
No, I'm not. I actually just got back.
Well, I'm here in a little town called Altamont in Utah. It's the gateway to the High Uinta Mountain Range. Let me just give you a little bit of background history. Altamont is quite a history of the old Spanish presence here in the Uinta Range of Utah. Uinta Mountains are an east-west running mountain range, much like the Bucecchi Mountains in Romania. They do run. There's just a very few mountain ranges. If you look at your maps, you'll notice most mountain ranges go north and south primarily. But this is a very large with large mountain range with elevation peaks as high as 14,000 feet. King's Peak is the largest, the highest place in Utah. We're well over 14,000 feet in elevation. So that gives you an idea. This is east-west. Now, what's significant about that is this means that these are very, very ancient mountains, the same as in Romania. You may know Romania from the legend of Dracula, the Transylvania, Vlad the Impaler, Dracul. Real person, ladies and gentlemen. It's... You know, does he really drink blood? Yeah, there was a lot of historical truth about that. He would actually take people he didn't like, his enemies that came against him. He would impale them on these large stakes and put them outside his high castle, Dracul's castle and would come out and actually drain their blood and consume it. And that, my goodness, a lot of very weird things happening in that part of the world. But that's the point is, that is an east-west mountain range, the Buchecha Mountains in Transylvania, all of it going. And just as weird things happen there and things that go bump in the night, the Uinta Mountains, both the north-facing slope and the south-facing slope, has an incredible history. It's a hotbed, probably one of the most famous places in the world. It was called the Uinta Basin for unidentified flying objects, UFOs, or whatever you want to call them now. Historically, this has been a real hotbed. Most people don't know that, but it's a fact. So I'm here, and this is there's a high mountain lake called Moon Lake. It's quite a place. It's parts of it is very, very deep. They haven't even found the bottom. And it has its very own type of lake, Loch Ness type of monster up here called the Moon Lake Monster. Many people claim they've seen it. Kevin, that's why I said, too bad you're not here. You can come in. You'd have some incredible times. I've rubbed shoulders with a lot of people who came up and, are you Truot? Are you? Yeah, they came from all over. They said to travel to hear me. I'm speaking tomorrow night at the gathering. I hope they haven't come a long way for nothing, but they're fans for whatever reason. I'll be discussing the incredible true story of the Egyptian artifacts and cave system found in the bottom of the Grand Canyon. Do you want to discuss that at all tonight, Kevin, or have you heard the story before?
No, I think bits and pieces, but let's do it.
Yeah, so keep in mind that I'm involved in a project on the south slope of the Uintas. I have been since about the year 2000. It's a project that is, I could write a book and you would probably think it's right, you know, out of X-Files. I mean, amazingly paranormal things happened there, including, you know, a lot. I have not myself personally witnessed, but other people have witnessed Sasquatch, Bigfoot there on the property many occasions. I'll tell you what happened to my team. I have two other fellows, one of them who might be listening tonight. And so I'll shout out to Sean and my friend Robert, my boy. We were up there getting some work done. And I'll tell you, we had an interesting experience, but not with the Bigfoot, but what could possibly be to be a nice, smaller-sized cryptoid, interdimensional, extra-dimensional entity. It's just, and I'll tell you as we go on the story. But yeah, the topic of discussion that I'll be presenting tomorrow with my slides involves a big part of this project, because what was discovered and really kept secret by the powers that be, starting with the Smithsonian Institute, is something that I think every honest person should at least hear about. Whether you decide to say it's valid or not, or whether I'm just a big hoaxer, I've heard all of the spectrum. Boy, when I had this on my blog, it was I had constant hits on it, people clicking on it, and oh, this is such a big hoax and you should be ashamed. Well, I keep responding to that. Why would I hoax it? I'm not selling anything. I just want, again, the story behind the story is telling the story, and you decide for yourself if it's valid or not. So with that, I had a close friend, a colleague in Washington, D.C. I actually had a gated state community there in Spencerville, Maryland, and he was very high level security, very, very high level security. His name is Dr. Melvin Laney. He has since passed on early in January of this year. He did pass on. Dr. Laney had access to a lot of information that the average person would ever consider. One of which is, he had unlimited access, I understand, to the secrets of the Smithsonian. And so he, because of my radio show largely, and because I don't hesitate in telling the story, he sent me a number of really amazing pictures that was snapped in the 1870s. Yeah, they had cameras back then. They were black and white. They didn't have color, but there was still a lot of pictures snapped. Because the Smithsonian sent an expedition down the Grand Canyon following the one-armed general, Major Powell, whose Lake Powell was named after, by the way. Major Powell made the first expedition down the Canyon of No Return, the Grand Canyon. And if you look closely in his report on his expeditions to Congress, it's in the Congressional Record, he talks about finding this cavern, this cave, quite a few yards up the steep, you know, eroded rock slopes. He was able to mountain climb up to it to explore it, and was amazed to find it completely full of Egyptian type of artifacts and hieroglyphics on the wall. So when his report was made to Congress, the Smithsonian Institute did their own expedition with him at the helm again in, I think it was 1873, and they came down with nothing but photographic equipment to document this amazing find. They took, as I understand, literally thousands of black and white photos. And so the artifacts remained pretty much untouched, even though they were now discovered, until the year 1909, when an employee of the Smithsonian, a guy named G.E. Kincaid, went down the Grand Canyon, and basically the rest is history as far as the artifacts making their public display. The story goes he did not continue down in boat. He mountain climbed up to the rim of the Grand Canyon and brought a rail spur right to the close to the area, and proceeded to you know, employ cranes, etc., to bring out these artifacts. Understandably, there were many rail cars loaded with these crated up artifacts, never to see the light of day, never to be put in a museum on the north rim of the Grand Canyon. I don't know about you, Kevin, but isn't that just kind of robbery to the people of America, and not even the people of the world?
Yeah, I would think so.
So the question is, really, did that really happen? Well, Dr. Laney sent me pictures that I have to believe are genuine. I have no reason. There was no reason for him to make up a hoax. No motive. Without motivation, how could it be a hoax? He just wants, you know, the story to be told in the hopes. This is when he sent me this documentation. It was. A few years after the Obama administration began to do their nonsense, and he actually wrote a strong letter to the congressional delegation, and even President Barack Hussein Obama, telling him that this should be brought to the people of the world and exposed. Of course, nothing happened, and it fell on deaf ears. But it's just one little voice called the story behind the story has told the story. Now, our producer, Dom, and he knows that we've talked about this. And in fact, I'm sure he remembers the pictures on my blog. When my blog, atruot.com, was shut down in 2019, I submit it was largely because this information, I mean, I've had many times that particular blog entry, those pictures have been hacked and taken down off my blog. WordPress said they've had nothing to do with doing that, that it was an outside high-level influence. But now it's just they just dropped my blog completely, and all the content was gone. That's in 2019. So welcome to free speech and the freedom of expression. Now, what the story behind the story is, the hieroglyphics of Egypt were not decipherable until something called the Rosetta Stone was found and discovered, which is basically showing the Egyptian hieroglyphics translated into other ancient languages. And so it was able to, okay, well, here we know how to read ancient Greek and so forth. And so they were able to determine what the hieroglyphics meant. And so here is, I mean, there were, I would say, probably a football field, 100 yards of wall hieroglyphics here in the Grand Canyon, according to Dr. Laney. Now, the story carved in the stone told the story of who was there, the people involved. We're talking about a community of around 50,000, give or take, and it went for about 150 years, about 3.5 generations. The lineage of the individual that first discovered that and began the outpost was none other than, according to the hieroglyphics, Joseph. Yes, the biblical Joseph, with a coat of many colors that you read about in Genesis. Hard to believe. I know for most people looking at that, well, it's really? Could that possibly be? I've told this story to a number of people, educated, you know, smart, high IQ people, and they look at me like, right, how in the world do they get ships up the Grand Canyon? Well, that's the other part of the enigma, Kevin. They didn't come by ships. They came via ancient tunnel systems that according to the rest of the hieroglyphics and maps, basically covered, you know, went underneath oceans, continents, all ancient. You know, we talk about, you know, the ancient ones. Some people call them the Tartarians, the high-tech cultures. We know from reading, again, the same book of the book of Genesis, where we read about Joseph. We read in Genesis chapter 6 that the fallen angels, the sons of God that came down, they actually found the women, earth women, to be attractive and interbred with them, hybrid interbreeding, and they created a race of giants called the Nephilim. That's, again, Genesis chapter 6, ladies and gentlemen. I don't care whether you are religious, believe in a creator or not. The Bible is a valid historical text, and this is very much a factual thing. The Nephilim. That's who we're talking about here in this tunnel complex under the Grand Canyon. Have you heard this story before, Kevin?
Yeah, like I said, bits and pieces. I mean, I know Alex discussed it, and over the years, you both have, but not all at once. So it's fascinating to know that, and matching it with where you are right now is, I'm listening.
So why are you in the mountains? Well, again, let me put a plug out for Peter Moon. We've had Peter Moon on the show many times, but I ought to schedule Peter as another guest. He's not getting any younger, but he's documented a series of books through his publication company called Sky Books. They're in New York City. The book that started that you need to read to understand the links is his book called Transylvania Sunrise. Transylvania Sunrise documents the absolute true story. This is like right out of X-Files. It's real, ladies and gentlemen. The FBI, this is not made up. This is international intrigue at the highest level. Transylvania Sunrise by Sky Books and Peter Moon didn't write a work of fiction. He was just contracted to tell the story of Brad Cesar and the Department X of Romania and explain why it is Romania was included in part of the NATO, North Atlantic Treaty Organization countries, and given huge, many billions of dollars from the military-industrial complex. The book explains why because it was to silence this information. In the heart of the Buchecheu mountain range, again, Transylvania, we find Cesar Brad, this gifted individual from birth, being able to uncover a monumental, what they called a holographic hall of records. That's right. You might want to remember that fictional movie of Superman when he goes to the North Country, the frozen ice, puts crystals into a computer and sees holographic images. That's what actually happened here in this ancient holographic hall of records. The chair in which you sit to access this hall of records, this holograph, is giant in scope, and they estimate by the rise of the seat, all of that it would accommodate an individual probably sitting, being at least 17 feet tall. A giant, yes, in every sense of the word. Then you see that the control and the handles, the control buttons, were actually designed for a six-fingered individual. Yeah, the Nephilim had six digits, five fingers and a thumb. Really? Yeah. They also had two rows of teeth. Two rows of teeth, ladies and gentlemen. They had ability to chew and crush bones to make your bread. Remember the Jack and the Beanstalk story? Fee-fi-fo-fum. Giant says, I smell the blood of an Englishman. Be he alive or be he dead, I'll grind his bones to make my bread. Yeah, the story is these giants, all through antiquity, these giants were very fond of consuming human flesh. They did that quite often. There's so many stories of this all through the early parts of Europe. Giants roamed the land. The Bible again says in other places in the Bible, like Genesis 6, there were giants in the land in those days. And of course, we know of Goliath, of Gath, the whole bloodline, of that coming out of the Nephilim. Yeah, it's what it is, folks. The giants of antiquity are very real. So we see this documented in the hieroglyphic record of this cave structure in the Grand Canyon. There was very large descending cavern. These passageways were polished. They're very smooth. There was carvings of the chariots, so-called, used to transport inside these tunnels. The best way to describe them is, think electromagnetic bullock trains of ancient times. The technology used by these subterranean individuals then and now is very high tech, very much high tech, and very much tied to the extra dimensional portals. Very much. See, we're not talking about outer space, galaxy far, far away, millions of light years away. No. These so-called UFO craft, ladies and gentlemen, are extra-dimensional. They come from an inner extra-dimension time and space within our own reality. If you get anything else out of this talk tonight, get that right there. That's important. So, Kevin, we see the connections now because in the cavern, this is why Dr. Laney shared it with me, and of course I posted it on my blog, and I talked to Alex and Dom and anybody else that thought I wouldn't think I wasn't too nuts and crazy. The reason why this is important is because part of the underground tunnel network shows basically a central hub. It's not in the Grand Canyon. The Grand Canyon is an outlier, part of a spoke of a wheel. But the hub is a center of seven subterranean caverns and forming in the shape of the symbol of the Aztec symbols carved on in their walls and their stone effigies, etc., of their origins space called Aztlan. Aztlan, A-Z-T-L-A-N, Aztlan. Imagine that. And as you follow the drawings, the maps, if you will, that are carved in the stone, Aztlan is located in the easternmost part of the Uinta Mountain Range, just an hour and a half, maybe 90 miles from where I sit right now, in the high Uinta Mountains of Altamont, Utah. So that's the gathering in Moon Lake, and believe me, it's crowded. I was here last year. I broadcast live. I had an interview with Ryan Burns, who was a speaker here on Friday night last year. You remember that show last end of July last year? It's much more of what, I mean, we've got standing room only. It's packed. We have a lot of people that came this year from all over, traveled long distances. Whole caravan of people from Texas came up. A lot of people from Missouri, Kansas, and meeting with them we had a banquet last night, a VIP, they're going to barbecue. So many were so gracious. Oh, we came to see you and hear you, Dr. I says, well, really? I'm not anything to come and listen to, but they seem to think it's important to learn about this Grand Canyon story and truth. You know, Kevin, you're not getting this from the media. I mean, come on, the reality TV that's out there telling just lies and using green screen. The true story of this connection is better than anything you can make up. You know, my imagination is not that deep to make up the story of the biblical Joseph, you know, being this part of this. So, yeah, according again to the hieroglyphics, that the Joseph of Egypt, the biblical Joseph, was indeed thrown into a cistern by his jealous brothers. And in that cistern, which was already carved by the same ancient entities, he happened to find an artifact of some sort. Didn't specify what, but it was like an ancient key of some sort. And he tucked it into his, you know, when they brought him back out and sold him and put him into bondage and in slavery in Egypt. And this artifact somehow activated some type of passageway under the Sphinx, which made the Pharaoh like, who is this Joseph? And that's, yeah, he interpreted Pharaoh's dreams, knew about the 7 years of famine, followed by, you know, after 7 years of plenty. All of that is recorded on the walls of the Grand Canyon, according to my photographs and Dr. Melvin Laney's testimony. So, what does this mean? First of all, I submit it means that the Bible account is true. That, in fact, the high technology was used to come to the Grand Canyon, coming up to the north rim of the Grand Canyon, and there, using the land of the Arab, the agricultural techniques, they build large granaries. They planted and harvested massive amounts of grain. It was that grain that basically allowed Egypt to survive the 7 year famine. Now, if you think that's too far fetched, on the north rim of the Grand Canyon, there's many, many, many Egyptian evidences there of ancient granaries. In fact, there was a cave uncovered in the north rim that I personally know the archaeologist that was involved, and it was a massive amount of grain stored there. And they looked at the grain that was in the center of the stone repository. They were able to plant it, and it sprouted, and they harvested. It was a very, very high yield grain with very, very large ears, very large grains. Wild story. and it's absolutely true. I can't help it if you're not reading it in the, even the National Geographic or the National Expositor. I mean, it's phenomenally, but it's factual. I witnessed it myself. It's reality. So what do you think about that story, Kevin?
It's quite fascinating. I know that there's a ton we don't know, especially about in the area that you're in. For example, the Anasazi Indians, they were doing things in their hieroglyphs. Really don't have any reasonable explanation. You have to speculate as to what they knew and what they witnessed. So, I think everybody should be open to all explanations.
I have actually talked to some of the Navajo as well as the Hopi elders, and it's all oral tradition. There's not much that they don't, you know, they don't write in their journals, of course. It's all oral, passed down. And they say the Anasazi, the ancient ones, they made a pact with the Nephilim giants, and they were basically taken into the inner earth with them. They were basically enslaved by them. And that's why some of these Anasazi Pueblo cliff dwellings, they have meals on the table. They just like vanish. It's very, very mysterious. But the legends of the Navajo and Hopi were that they had made a covenant in blood with these fallen ones, and they were just taken for whatever reason into the earth. The Hopi call them the ant people, not because they look like ants, you know, no, because they live inside the earth, in the earth, as an ant would live, with compartmentalized tunnel, just a massive tunnel system. You ever seen those, you know, when I was a kid, we used to be able to buy these ant colony farms that it was kind of had a four-sided glass that you could see them tunneling and living and bringing and storing food, and it's pretty amazing. That's the story of the Anasazi, according to the Hopi and the Navajo. So, I mean, they disappeared, the ancient ones. They just were basically taken. Are you aware of the story there in Afghanistan by the special forces? I had one of the people here knows the story, and he listened to this show, he said, and he knows personally the rescue team that went in with the special forces, and he told me the rest of the story. I tried to find him tonight to be on the show, because that would be an interesting seg. He basically said, no, what happened after the Kandahar giant episode. See, they were doing reconnaissance. A ranger force was coming up into this cavern in the high mountains of Afghanistan. And they went into this cave complex, which was amazing. There were a lot of bones, in fact, human bones, around the entrance. And there was this red-haired giant that came after him and actually killed one of the special forces, ran a spear right through his body armor, just ran right through him, powerful, and impaled him and lifted him up. They opened fire, had a firefight, and killed this red-haired giant. So this is, if you just look up the Kandahar giant story, you'll see eyewitness accounts that what happened. But the story behind the story, according to this special forces individual, he said, what's not told is after this giant was lifted out by a transport helicopter in a netting, we went into the cave complex to explore it. And he told me what they witnessed there. They did a retreat, because the Kandahar giant was just one of many hundreds, and they didn't want to engage with them. So the story behind the story, well, you just heard another segment of it here. The part of the complex in the Grand Canyon, there were parts of the tunnel complex that had special, shall we call, I don't want to call them idols. They were almost like Hindu type of, or I'm sorry, Buddhist effigies sitting in lotus position that were there to basically, according to the hieroglyphics, to guard the entryways, which went further down. And Kincaid's story, G.E. Kincaid's story, as they went to explore those, that it was overpowering smell of snakes. If you've ever been into a den of vipers, of hibernating rattlesnakes, I had the misfortune of going close to that one time. And the best way to say, it's like somebody's been slicing a bunch of fresh cucumbers. It's a smell that you don't soon forget with hundreds of hibernating rattlesnakes. It smells like cucumbers is the best way I can describe it. But according to Kincaid, it was overwhelming odor. And as they went down, they heard things down below that they didn't want to proceed any further. The stench was too overpowering. And so they left, and that's the story behind the story. They took out what artifacts they could, the mummies, the sarcophagus, many, many, many hundreds of, not thousands, of artifacts, tons of things, literally. And we don't know anything about it. We're kept in the dark. I submit, like Dr. Laney said, Kevin, it's because they don't want to have anything that gives validity to the Holy Bible. They're in the business of hiding God, it would seem. And he didn't think that was something that should continue. So that's kind of what I'll be presenting with my slides tomorrow night. So come on, fly out if you want to come and have a good time. Let's just listen to some ramblings in person.
Well, is there a chance somebody will be able to video it and we can watch it later on?
Absolutely. Yeah, we'll do that. It's going to be videotaped. And I'll get a live stream. Yeah, there's a good group, a really good group of guys. You know how much the tickets are to come in to see this?
Don't know.
Zero. It's free. You come in and just sit on your lawn chair and listen if you want. There's catering trucks. They, you know, sell some good food and drinks and that. That's it. And it's not outrageously expensive catering trucks either, by the way. So it's at the Altamont City Park. They have a little racetrack with horse racing around but this is, man, it's hard to find a parking spot. It's packed. Easily double the people that was here last year. Seems to be getting a following. Okay.
Right on. Who else is out there? I'm sure there's probably quite a few big names. I went by the site. I personally didn't recognize the names, but I mean, who knows? I think some of these people have been on the show.
I'll probably next week. I'll probably interview Robert Kreiper. He's Kreider. He's speaking before I wrap up. I'm the kind of the keynote speaker, they say. And so he's got quite a history. Last year, Ryan Burns with Space Wolf Research was, oh my goodness, those things that are happening at his property, which is the bordering property right next to Skinwalker Ranch, so-called. And I got to tell you, there was a gentleman that I met just today, and he said, oh, you're the investigator that came in there with Ryan Burns. And Ryan Burns had a podcast of what you experienced that, you know, with the Skinwalker shapeshifter. I said, well, yeah, I didn't see anybody shapeshift, but I did investigate the shootings that occurred there with the caretaker. And there were some very weird things that happened there. This is reservation, Ute reservation land. And you know what's funny is what happens on the reservation stays on the reservation. I mean, they have their own set of rules and laws that are different. I'm not saying better or worse. They're just different than the way we do things here. And I'm kind of thinking they're better. They don't have corrupt individuals, it doesn't seem like. And the justice is pretty swift. You know, if you do something pretty outrageous, like, I mean, sell drugs, if you rape a child on the Ute Reservation, you know what happens to you?
Hmm.
You have any idea? They actually banish you on pain of death from the reservation land. You are, see, the Ute lands are their sovereign nation. They're like a nation within a nation. Most people don't realize that. But you're banished. You have no citizenship. You're stripped of your identity as a Ute, and you're out. And if you're ever caught back on, they will kill you. And that's their own law, and the Bureau of Indian Affairs allows it to go on. I think that's pretty darn cool.
Makes sense. That's what it should.
Banish you. And there's, you know, go to the main Ute. They have a big grocery store and office complex. They're just not far from my property, actually, because our property sits right on the border, the boundary of the reservation lands. So I go in there, and they have it's a kind of a such and such picture of such and such, their Ute name, their English name. And the tribal council, they've been banished. It's like the wall of shame. And I asked one of the tribal police, what does this mean? They says, oh, it means that they are no longer a Ute Indian. They're banished. Not only them, but any of their posterity. If they're all interconnected. They're just not allowed to have any citizenship whatsoever, and if they come back, we will arrest them, and they will be executed. I mean, pretty harsh, but not really. You're just stripped of everything. Depends on the crime, surely, but it's, you know, if they caught doing massive drugs to the kids, massive drug dealing, you're caught, convicted in their court. They have an elder or the group of elders that sit in judgment, and if you're convicted unanimously, you're banished. Murder, egregious crimes, and murder right up there is. They don't have many homicides, but there's more than one that was pedophilia with children. There's zero tolerance, man. You are done. You're no longer a Ute Indian. I applaud that. That's just way cool. So
yeah, should be.
Yeah, I agree completely. So anyway, yeah, that's what we're here. We went up as you go up to Moon Lake. There, you pass through the reservation lands, and then you pass a certain elevation. You go into the Forest Service lands, and yeah, it's quite a historical place. I was talking to a group of people that claim to have seen the Moon Lake Monster, they call it. There's a little pamphlet they put out about eyewitnesses of it. And I submit, like anything else, it's extra dimensional. You know, you don't see it every time you're out there. It shows up once in a while. I submit it's very much like Bigfoot. It comes when it needs to come for whatever reason, and then it just slips back. And I think maybe Loch Ness Monster, Nessie, is a cryptoid extra-dimensional. It's when you see it, it's in this dimension of time and space, but people say, well, if Bigfoot was real, why didn't you ever see a dead Bigfoot? Because they're extra-dimensional. You shoot one, I think it just go back to the dimension of space where it originated. The northern tribes of northern Canada and the Eskimo have their legends of the hairy Bigfoot, and they know that it's extra dimensional. They know it's just like another tribe, basically. They know it's there, know it's real, but they never see a dead one because of the nature of it, okay? So, I mean, yeah, it's what is what it is. So, wow, 45 minutes in. Or is there anything else you wanted to talk about in the first hour, Kevin?
Well, I was kind of preparing to mention what's going on with Pfizer and some of these vaccines. Now, something interesting happened with there's a group called Follow the Money, and they're looking at the financials based on quarter one of 2023. Fascinating, 97% drop in the, this is Pfizer's COVID vaccine, Comirnaty is what they're calling it, but whatever their Pfizer juice is. Huh. So that's you know, some good news. Their revenue guidance is about $30 billion lower than 2022. Of course, I'm sure they've got something else up their sleeve, and they took a lot of those profits and are stashing it into R&D and cooking up all sorts of terrible stuff for humanity. But this phase appears to be over. So that's at least you know, gives us a little room to breathe. And I wouldn't put it past anyone to, I mean, with that amount of money, the self-preservation is just kicking in, because one of the biggest crimes, well, I would say the biggest crime in modern history is this biological war that's happening.
Right, and I sent a link to the Stu Peters broadcast. We talked with our friends in Canada while during this height of this insanity. Remember the story that kind of was videotaped, went a little bit viral, pastor Arthur, I might just mispronounce his name. Arthur, what? Pawlowski, I think is how you call it. Pawlowski, Arthur Pawlowski. He came in, and they basically came to the health department, came in to roust him out and to basically empty his church. And he said, "This is a house of God. You get out. You get out." And just basically banished the health department. He says, "You have no right to come in and tell us, you know, we can't worship." I was kind of remember that story?
I do.
Well, he was arrested and was just convicted and sentenced for 10 years in prison.
Oh, so awful, man. I mean, we cannot forget these people. And if Canada wants to target us, or anyone wants to target us for putting together money, we'll find a way. We'll find a way, and we have to remember what they are doing here and elsewhere. And we got to get them out. We have to get these people out of jail. So many people. No,
They supposedly convicted him. The charges against him, and he's apparently convicted, according to the report of Stu Peters. For, get this, eco-terrorism. Eco-terrorism.
Well, we need to make sure to write down their cell numbers, because we want to replace them in the exact spot that they put our friends, our people, the people who stood up and fought against this tyranny. Their cells should become very special places that are reserved for those who persecuted.
Amen. I just, top of the list with the number on his, you know, is Pierre Trudeau. I mean Justin Trudeau. No, that's dad, Pierre. But Justin, I mean, come on, this guy needs to go to jail. Eco-terrorism? I mean, shame on the Royal Mounted Police. The Mounties. what's going on with this? That you can't have separation of church and state at all? I mean, this is inexcusable. So,
yeah. No, we're not going to forget, and you know, the Canadians, in the United States, some of the worst in Australia. How quickly these people came and lockstep and did the most horrendous things, visiting people at midnight because of a Facebook post. I mean, it's madness. And I say, oh, well, we were just doing our job. Listen, I give you 3 months. Okay, like in full force of the pandemic, I give you 6 months. But if you still are doing that, I don't have any sympathy for you. Normally, I support the police, but not in this case. You're something other than the police. You no longer are there to help us. You're part of the problem. And
you turned into the brown shirts of Adolf Hitler, basically.
That's right.
Yeah, yeah. I'm sure the regular, you know, German police, I mean, they didn't. But you know, that's the other thing. If you have the power base and the brokers coming out telling you what to do, do you just do it because you have to keep a job and respect authority type of thing? I gotta say, shame on the people that did that. And we're talking the Royal Canadian Mounted Police, basically, because that's really the ones that I guess came in and arrested him and gave him the warrant.
Yeah.
So. RCMP. I don't know for sure, but I don't think it was a local constabulary. I may be wrong. But see, that's eco-terrorism? No, for being a pastor that says, no, we're going to worship no matter what you say. If we have a pandemic and we all get sick and die, well, that's our choice. We believe that God can protect us. See? That's your choice. No, not an eco-terrorist charge. Really? Evidently, it was, according to Stu Peters, he was convicted and sentenced to 10 years. Whether that'll be commuted or not, I don't know. He didn't appear to be a very young man. I think 10 years could be pretty much the end of his life.
Yeah. And I mean, I know people have their own opinions about Trump and whatnot, but we need to take a look at what's going on with this guy, how he's been targeted. I think they don't realize every time they bring more and more of these charges, I mean, that they're just ridiculous, that they've never done for any other previous president who have done, I mean, some really terrible things. It is absolute tyranny. There's somebody up top is saying, I don't care what it looks like. Do it. There is no way he's going to have to run from jail. And he just now said that even if he's thrown in prison, he's still going to run. And he can. He can. And I'll tell you, you take a look and you, I know there's people that are going to hate him no matter what. But now you've got, for a lot of other people, you've kind of turned him into a Mandela. People don't like tyranny. And I know there's going to be, you know, the good 20% that'll just be with it no matter what, because that's the thing that Hollywood is telling them to do or the media is telling them to do. But the rest of us, there's a lot of people I talk to that are Democrats that supported Biden aren't anymore. Voted for Biden aren't anymore supporting him. They don't like the way the economy is going. They hate Trump, but now they're sympathetic. They're seeing how, you know, they've gone through COVID. They were against the lockdowns. They were against the vaccines. And now nobody's taking responsibility. So you start persecuting people on this level, there's a breaking point. I'm telling you. And things are going to happen. I hope there's not violence. I really do. But there's only so much they can take. And that's, I think, what they were testing out in places like New Zealand and Australia. How much could they get away with? and it appears a lot more. So we'll have to wait and see. We'll wait for the next engineered disease that comes along. And I don't know. What do you think it's going to be, true? Malaria or monkeypox?
Neither one. It's going to be much worse. It's already been scheduled out. It's the what's it called? The my mind just went blank. You caught me. I'll think of, I'll keep you as I come to the second hour. But yeah, the your blood, you're going to rupture and bleed internally in your lungs. I forget. My God,
Ebola.
No, it's different than Ebola, but it ties in again. If you know what's being planned, you look back at the mycoplasma. Mycoplasma is energized by the radiation, 5G, and all the way now to 6G in the next phases. So you have the mycoplasma, the next level, according to DARPA's research, the next phase will create bleeding in the lungs rapidly, and you'll basically drown in your own blood. The death from COVID, so-called SARS-CoV, which is the mycoplasma, came from the reaction of that with 5G in persons and their lungs, and they were not able to exchange oxygen, and so their blood oxygen level dropped to the very critical level. They basically died of the same effects of carbon monoxide poisoning. Hypoxia. Oh. That's what happens. And when you respirate somebody, intubate them, you just make it worse.
Yeah. Too bad they had to find that out the hard way. Or
Marburg.
They already knew.
Marburg. The Marburg syndrome. It's going to happen. It's in the plan. We talked about SARS-CoV-2 well before it hit. But anyway, we're going to come back with this, and we'll delve into some more cryptoid stories and tell you what really happened to me. I witnessed this last weekend. We'll be right back. Don't go away. This is the story behind the story. I'm your host, Dr. H. Blood. Kevin Burdock, thanks for joining us. Be right back.
Radio at freedomslips.com. We'll be right back after this message.
Hey everyone, it's Barbara Jean Lindsay, the Cosmic Oracle. If you have questions about your past lives or future plans, need answers from the cosmos about your love life or career, or just want to keep your finger on the pulse of the planet, check out my show, The Cosmic Oracle, here on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com.
Join me and the Brian Ruse Show on Revolution Radio, Eastern Standard Time, every Tuesday night from 6 to 8. We talk about the four most vital things, in my view, affecting all of humanity. Number one is UFOs and aliens and their agenda for the advancement of humanity. Number two is the Jewish establishment's control over all aspects of human civilization. Number three, the truth about Adolf Hitler, how he was the opposite of what we've been told. Number four is advanced ancient global civilizations. Join me on the Brian Ruse Show, Tuesday nights from 6 to 8 on Studio B on Revolution Radio.
Don't miss the Crypt Rick and Jonathan Show every Saturday, 6 to 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, Studio B, right here at Revolution Radio.
The journey begins to fun, health, and freedom.
Find some comfort at Willow's World. A variety of news, commentary, and poetry at Willow's Poetry Corner, where there are comfy cushions and a tempting selection of delectable comestibles. A show that's quirkily and quintessentially British, with a unique twist featuring Willow Andreessen, your host. Join Willow Mondays and Thursdays, 2 till 4 p.m. Eastern Time, Studio A.
I am Bill Johnson. Some consider my efforts to be an underground law school. I am not an attorney, and I do not give legal advice. I teach. That's lawful and legal. Consider yourself served. You are to appear Wednesday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern, Studio A. My forte? Foreclosure and contract law. Grab your legal pad and pen. Learn a broad spectrum of law spanning administrative, criminal, family, tort, and federal law. Fools and losers cling to old cases. I dissect and comment on the latest rulings that control the courts. Don't be a loser. And if you don't appear, you will be held in contempt.
I want to thank everybody for listening to Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com, the one place where information never sleeps. Revolution, Revolution Radio!
All right, let's show them what we got here.
Oh, the doctor is in, and man, we are so in, ladies and gentlemen. I am in Altamont, Utah, the absolutely incredible Moon Lake Gathering. Amazing. The sun's going down. It's starting to cool off. It's been unseasonably hot. I mean, wow. Temperatures in the mid-90s, and that's unusual for this high elevation. We're pretty high in the foothills of the Uinta Mountains. Weather modification, you know, I've done so much research on this. The United States Air Force did a joint study back in, I think it was the 90s, 1995, 96. And there's a 30-year study, a 30-year plan. I commented on this radio show with Alex many, many times. The study was weather as a force multiplier, controlling the world's weather by 2025. Wow, you just don't do something like this in a few months. You don't make up a vaccine like Pfizer did and make billions of vials of it in just a few months, no matter what Operation Warp Speed you want to call it. It's not real, Mr. Trump, with all due respect. You don't do it. It takes years to make billions. It takes decades to control the weather. So how do you do it? You need to deploy microwave stations and satellites to basically put radiation in the form of microwaves onto certain parts and sectors of the upper atmosphere, and then you can control the weather. And they have to have a cover story. This doggone global warming, you know, golly, we're going to have more wind farms, which are absolutely insane. We did show after show about the cost to build these wind turbines that have maybe a 10-year life, and the cost to make them is much, much more than the savings you have by the turbine generations. And it's just the nonsense just continues to go. And we have all of this move to, with Governor Newsom, Gruesome Newsom in California. Well, we're going to have all electric vehicles by such and such a day. How much it costs energy-wise to make a high-output battery? And how, and where do you, when you plug these things in, where does that energy come from? The energy plug-in ferry? Where do you generate these things? Where's the energy generated?
True, I saw a meme today. This is a real photograph of a guy charging his electric car with a generator. I mean, come on.
Was it gas or propane?
Gas.
Probably an older one.
Yeah.
It's insane. I'll confess something to you, Kevin. I don't mind. I just like fuel efficient vehicles. Okay. I drive, don't hold this against me, but my commuter vehicle around, I buzz around, do chores, and then I move. If I have to drive any length of time, I like my 45 mile per gallon Prius. I mean, that hybrid battery and that structure with the motor, there's not a whole heck of a lot to go wrong with that vehicle. I mean, the transmission is just, there's very little moving parts. I appreciate the technology, and I like, if I drive really sensible, I might get upwards of 50 miles per gallon on that thing on the highway. Now, the reason why I like high mileage vehicles like this is I just don't like enriching the freaking oil companies. All right. But it's not practical to, if I have to travel 600 miles to my place in North Idaho, do I have to go halfway and sleep to recharge my Tesla? And the charge, have you priced the charging stations that are propping up all over, the amount they charge you per minute use? Good hell. It's better to pay $4 or $5 a gallon. It's insane to me. And you don't have the range. Could that be just because it's control? It's a control factor?
Well, and those costs are being propped up and sustained by the government. What happens if they have to be competitive in the real world when none of that is there, when you don't get all the special perks and the green bonuses and all of the special funding and everything that's going with it? This is And the regulators are overlooking the deception and lies. They're not only enjoying all of that, but none of the rules apply to these people with this green stuff. As long as you get that green stamp of approval, if they had to compete in the real world and their product was put up against everybody else. Then the media honestly reported not only what the real nature of the purpose of these cars are and the performance, which in some cases I think is great. You know, depending on where you live and your cost of electricity and how far the range you want to go, buy one. I don't care. Don't force everybody else to get one. That's obscene. It's absurd. It's something that, if it's something that's so great, you shouldn't have to sell it, kind of like the vaccines.
Yeah, if it's legitimate and this and that, why not improve on, and Toyota, you know, has, and I told this story many times on this station. You know, there is technology. I know this because I was involved in this decades ago. Water is energy. Water is hydrogen and oxygen. In case you don't know, ladies and gentlemen, oxygen is flammable. You can't have a fire without oxygen, and hydrogen is flammable. It's a gas. So if you break water into its components of hydrogen and oxygen, you can run clean burning fuels. I mean, it's simple. I worked on a, had this all, we had this ready to go in a big way. And I took a page out of the physicist Pons and Fleischmann's work. They call it cold fusion. It's not really that at all. There's no fusion going on. It's really just there's the power of hydrogen. And you know, we hear about nuclear bombs. They're hydrogen bombs, ladies and gentlemen. Heavy water, hydrogen structure. When the chain reaction happens in hydrogen, massive energy is released. Do it cold fusion. Well, it's really called releasing the latent energy in water, ladies and gentlemen. So, fact. Do you realize this, Kevin? When, you know, Professors Pons and Fleischmann were doing their research at the University of Utah here in Salt Lake City. And they announced the breakthroughs. They could take, keep in mind they were achieving the cold fusion, so-called, by means of vibratory frequency, subjecting water to elemental frequency and causing it to be able to release in cold energy. I mean, this can be burned and consumed. And what an amazing thing. What happens, you know, they were discredited in the most heinous way. I covered this on my, you know, public radio show back then about how and I interviewed them. Amazing. What the story behind the story of Pons and Fleischmann is, they were taken off the garbage dump heap, so to speak, and dusted off and propped up with a massive amount of R&D dollars by who? Toyota. Little known factoid. They said, we want you to develop a vehicle that runs on water. And they did. And they did. And they did. I had an inside source because Pons and Fleischmann, I knew them, right? Now, get this, folks. The powers that be that really control this country, the oligarchs of the big oil, no, you're not going to run an, there's not going to be a vehicle running on water. No. Toyota says, oh, yes, we're going to do it. You know, at the time, you know, this is when General Motors and Ford and they were really in the red and needing, you know, props from the government handouts to survive, right? The only real company that was, this was well before the Korean companies came out, you know, the Kias and all that. Toyota was always in the black. I mean, powerfully so. The technology, they were a better vehicle. You know, they just were. So they were, if you look at their stock and the dividends they were paying at this and they were going to announce at the car show, they're all powerful new engine running on water. Zero emissions. When you burn water this way, you know what the byproduct is? It's not carbon dioxide. It's not burning fossil fuels. The byproduct is water vapor. You get that? That's the result of burning this in the cold fuse. The byproduct is more water, because water is really basically indestructible. It's hydrogen and oxygen. Boom, boom, boom. What happened was this. No, we're not going to allow you to do this. Well, how are you going to stop us? Well, the way they stopped it, remember the sticking accelerator fiasco?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it was terror. People's, I'm driving along. Oh, my brakes don't work. I can't even stop the car. It just goes, accelerates, and fatalities happen. Remember all the hearings that were held in the Senate and the, you know, the Federal Transportation Commission, where all of this, all these hearings, what's really going on? I covered, that's before CNN was really, you know, covering. But I had my contacts, and they were listening in. Though the documentation, the linkages of the Toyota accelerators, no matter what vehicle it was, whether it's a Camry or Land Cruiser or whatever, they were mechanically sound. There was no way that any, even the Federal Transportation Commission couldn't find any problems with the linkage sticking. Well, I made contacts to the labs, right? And I said, you know that it's the black box technology. See, every car sold in America has to have this black box to show. It's like the black box of a flight controller. Everything that is done is reported on a computer in the black box. I know this because I worked for Chevrolet and went to Mr. Goodrand's school in General Motors, and they told all about it. I had the unmitigated gall, Kevin, to write a letter to protest to the chairman and the board of General Motors, complaining that they should make a stand not to allow the government oversight to the black box technology. And you know the reason why I told them that? If it's computer driven, it can be hacked. And if it can be hacked, it could cause a malfunction in that vehicle operation. It could cause uncontrolled acceleration. And I had a computer expert verify that is a possibility. Is it a probability? We don't like to think of that, but it's a possibility. Why are you having the black boxes in there that can be controlled through North Star or whatever the satellite technology they had to track you? It just seemed like it's something we didn't need to have Big Brother involved in. My response from the Toya engineers is a short little terse, short but sweet. What we know is one thing, yes. What we can prove is a whole other thing combined. So all the negative publicity, Toyota's unsafe vehicles, sticking accelerators. It was disastrous. They lost I don't know how many billions of profit over that. And so they did abandon the water vehicle. You know, that's the story behind the story that a lot of people don't know about. But I mean, that's why I drive a Toyota Prius, guys. Just saying. You can modify that so easy through the carburation unit. Once you have the onboard generator to have what's called HHO gas, it burns much, much better than natural gas, propane, or even gas in a fuel injector. Much, much cleaner. Accelerates better, more. It's almost like a turbocharge. What a shame. Yet, here we are still paying outrageous. I heard that the gasoline in California with Newsom is like, what, $7, $8 a gallon? It's bad enough here in Utah, $4, but it's like double there in California, land of the gruesome Newsom. We don't need to be paying this. We can fill up with a garden hose. If you had to take a leak, man, put it in a bottle, stick it in your car, because any liquid will suffice to release the hydrogen and oxygen. Fact. See, I'm ranting. I wasn't planning on talking about this, but it's just, it's hot. It's unseasonably hot here in Altamont. What's your thoughts, Kevin?
Well, I think that it's climate change.
You do?
It happens four times a year.
I'm going to, when I meet up with you, I'm going to slap you. And then I'm going to give you a big hug and say I love you.
Yeah, getting back to that, I think that, as we're talking about action on this, and we talk about it all the time. For people that have a good place to start, and this is really going to boil your blood, but go to there's a guy named Watts, W-A-T-T-S, and he's really kind of a whistleblower on this environmentalism, and his site is Watts Up With That, W-A-T-T-S,
right, yeah.
Up With
yeah,
That.
Yeah, he does a good job. It's fun. He's good.
Yeah, and so he's exposing a ton of stuff, like the NOAA stations, like 95% of where they're testing all of the, they're getting temperatures, aren't up to their own specs. They're not up to NOAA standards, which means like you don't put one in a, you know, in a big parking lot surrounded by cement. You know, you're not going to get a good temperature reading there. And so 95% of he's got a whole group of people that go out. You can join up. They just got done with one about a year ago, and they're mounting up to do it again. And he's going to be doing it internationally. So check it out over there. It's pretty simple and kind of a fun thing to do. It's like, you know, like geocaching. If you're in an area and you want to, like, just go someplace that you haven't been and maybe do some good. Take your cell phone and take the guidelines and go get your GPS coordinates for this thing and go out there and take a picture. And there's a guideline to, you know, what information you should gather and what you should observe around there. That's the part of the problem. I think we have to go further. I really do. I think we have to start exposing these people, but we need to be aggressive the way they're aggressive about canceling people that they dislike or that threaten them. They go after them personally. And so I think that, you know, that's not a thing that you typically want to engage in as a Christian, but there's a bigger fight out there. And this is a bigger fight, and I think that we're at war, especially with these people. And we need to go get some James O'Keefe. You need to get some footage. You know, you got some extra money. You want to talk to your friends and keep it quiet. Hire a PI, or maybe do some research yourself, and go after these people. Because they're lying to us, and they're getting paid to do it, and so they're inherently dishonest people. And if people don't seem to care about that part of it, maybe they'll care about what else these people do, which I'm sure is salacious and immoral. And so maybe we ought to give that a shot. You know, we've all experienced it on our side of things. People coming after us. I think it's high time that you do it. Obey the law. You know, don't break the law, because that'll ruin everything. But get some photos, get some information, figure out what these people do at night. Become an investigative reporter, and you know, make sure that you're very cautious about it and do it legally. But I think that that's what we're down to right now. We have to just knock them out one by one, discredit them. And if we can't discredit them at their work, we can discredit them in their personal lives. That's about it. It's war. It's war. This is nonsense. You know, it's nonsense. Everybody knows that we don't cause hurricanes. The Industrial Revolution. Before the Industrial Revolution, we had hurricanes and tornadoes, and the life went on. Okay, before we came around, there was extreme weather, some very serious stuff, and it wasn't the fault of the dinosaurs. Okay, it wasn't you know, when the first fire. I mean, there've been wildfires before man. Okay, there's been a ton of stuff. Pinatubo explodes, and we find out, because we just had the science at that time in the 80s, that what was put in the atmosphere by Pinatubo was equivalent to the entire Industrial Revolution. And that's just one volcanic eruption. So for these people, they're shysters, and we have to stop them. I mean, they're going to lock us down because of this. And there's people stupid enough out there who actually do think that hurricanes are caused by mankind, you know, by a bunch of cars in L.A. That it ain't going to go away. So I don't want to get locked down for any reason, and that's another reason that they're coming after us, and we got to fight back.
Well said. Well, let's shift gears. I told you I mentioned this brochures a little bit about the cryptoids, the extra dimensionals. I'm still trying to get John D'Souza to come on the show, talk about his book, The Extra Dimensionals. What an I'm reading it a third time. He's got it. I can't agree more. His premise is everything unexplainable, from the paranormal to even religion and miracles, can all be explained in the extra-dimensional realm. And that's so important to understand that, you know, we can't take the word of a Wernher von Braun, you know, a convicted Nazi, and NASA. We have to understand that the Bible is correct. We live in a closed system called the firmament. We have a firmament dome over us. I look back over my interviews with individuals, they could not go on the show and be public, but they talked to me privately, off the record, talking about people that took oaths of secrecy after they experienced what they did in Operation High Jump. They witnessed these so-called Foo Fighters at the time, these high-tech new things coming out of the water, brandishing Nazi symbols on the discs, and taking down, destroying, you know, sinking a destroyer and making, you know, mincemeat out of the fighter planes. That happened. So it's not, you know, it's not from galaxies far, far away. It's something very, very sinister. The Anunnaki, the secret society of Bavaria, made compacts and deals with the fallen angels. The message is the same thing Paul wrote anciently to the Ephesians and the Galatians and others. Remember, brethren, we do not wrestle against flesh and blood. I don't wrestle against my brother Kevin. I don't wrestle against Mr. Rowe or anybody else. We may have differences of his opinion, but we are flesh and blood, and we're in the same battle. We wrestle against principalities and powers, which in the original Greek text and even the Aramaic has to do with it. Basically, principalities and powers are those of the unseen realm, the extra dimensionals. Now, you know, Bigfoot, for whatever you think and about that, it clearly is an extra dimensional. It's what's called a cryptoid or a hidden being. Let me just tell you what happened. And one of the reasons, you know, it was amazing. That's last Friday, my group, my friends, we went in there to repair our snowcat, which had it broke a track. We had to get some special tools and jacks and that, because it's very hard to repair if it's not on 3 foot of snow. You know, snow can be dug out and you can move the track and fix it pretty simply, but if you don't have the snow cushion, it's a little difficult. Anyway, we get up there, and long story short, we get the snowcat track on, we get it ready to move onto the trailer. And as we start moving the snowcat, and keep in mind, it's probably, I would say, at least 85 degree Fahrenheit. And as it moves, I noticed before we started the snowcat up to move it, there was a nice little tidy pile of rodent scat on both the passenger side seat and the driver's side seat. And I looked at it closely, and it was pretty much dried out, but it wasn't fresh. But it had to be there because my friends and I were in there a week earlier to assess the situation. I looked, and we took the battery, which was and didn't need to be replaced, all of that, and there was no evidence of any rodent scat. Like, these were big, like almost like a marmot would give, or a very large pack rat maybe. Okay, so I'm thinking, first of all, how in the world did a rodent get inside of this closed cabin compartment? Because part of a snowcat is is like a Sherman tank on track. They're sealed. There's no chassis underneath. They're basically sealed structure right on top of the snow. So there's no moving parts for them to come in and come up into the undercarriage. Just not, I don't see how it's possible they got into that. No way that I could see. And that was, that's a mystery. But as we pulled away and I looked down, here is my friend that was with me, Sean, pointed out, there was this little rodent looking thing right under in the shade of the snowcat undercarriage. I didn't want to squish it because it looked kind of cute. It wasn't like a rat, but it was the coat was almost like a really glossy bunny rabbit, and the ears were around like Mickey Mouse, you know, but big, not like a rat's ears. And his face was cuddly, and then I looked at it, and its tail was furry. Like not like a big bushy squirrel's, but pretty close. Well, we get a little better look at it, and never seeing such a thing. I was amazed as it kind of just started chattering at me in rodent language, almost like scolding me, but it wasn't afraid of me. Was looking up at me and is talking to me. And my friend Sean, who may be listening tonight, thought, well, it's vermin, right? So he kind of just kicked at it and kicked dust on it, and it just kind of seemed like it just shook itself a little bit and proceeded to run out from under, and then jumped into a bitterbrush bush. Just jumped right into it. And I watched him jump, and the bitterbrush didn't even hardly move. It just like, I thought, well, that was an interesting little critter. But as we got the snowcat loaded up, did all of our work, and we got into the oil to head home. And I thought, what in the world was that? And it just came to me. It looked like what I'd seen in zoos, a chinchilla. Well, really, a chinchilla? Is this a new species cropping up in the Uinta Mountains? Well, I looked online, and the Wikipedia that explained about chinchillas. They're indigenous and found in South America in the high Andes, in Chile, and into Bolivia in the high mountain areas. Okay, they do really well in high low temperature. Their fur is luxurious and thick. In fact, there's a website on people that like to have chinchillas as pet because they seem to have affinity to humans. They bond with humans, and they live as long as 20 years in captivity. And they do tricks, and they like to be scratched, and their fur is just luxurious. In fact, they make a very prized chinchilla fur coat, for heaven's sakes. I'm learning all this, and I never thought I'd ever see a chinchilla, let alone, you know, maybe in a zoo, but not under my snowcat in the Uinta Mountains. It's very strange, and I thought, this is odd, to say the least. And my friend Sean went on and did some research, too, and found that their body temperature is very sensitive, and because they can't sweat, their fur will heat stroke out and die at temperatures above 75 degrees Fahrenheit. And let me tell you, it was well above 75 degrees Fahrenheit that day when this little thing jumps out. What was odd is I went over to where I went into the bush, thinking, is there a burrow there that he's safe in? I'd want to see him in the burrow or see him going in. No, I didn't see him anywhere. There was no hole, no burrow. It's like it just vamoose vanished. I thought, well, that's strange. We got work to do. It's a little rodent, right? A little critter. This was Friday this was last week, as we were, you know, that's what we're doing. We're trying to get the snowcat back to get on the radio show with you guys. Friday night after, you know, I listened to some of your show guys, and I just went to sleep fairly early. For me, I was pretty tired. And I got to tell you, that night I had a dream encounter where I'm sitting back there moving the snow cat, and this time this little chinchilla, gorgeous fur. I mean, the fur is shimmering and shining, almost just full of glossy sheen. And instead of chattering me and chirp, 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 it's speaking to me in my dream. And it's giving me a special message that it comes from a different realm. It's coming to give me a message and to stay the course, that this project will be successful in a big way. Now, the last thing I expected to have in a dream is a talking chinchilla. Chilling with the chinchilla in a dream state, that's not, no, I never thought of that. And so when I woke up and I reflected on what my dream was so vivid and real, it was 5:30, 6 o'clock. I thought, what in the world was that about? Is that a nonsensical dream? Well, I went online. I said, chinchilla messengers. I Googled chinchilla in a dream. And there's a website that popped up first on the first hit was spirit animals, totems. And I was amazed to see in the indigenous native Chilean high Andes Indian tribe, they revere and have as their one sacred totem animals the chinchilla. And they explained what the symbolism is of the totem animal, the chinchilla. And then, believe it or not, in the message of what chinchillas do when they manifest to people, if that happens and it's followed by what they call the chinchilla dream, it's a very special thing. And in fact, a lot of the medicine men, the spirit guides of the indigenous people seek that. They seek the guidance of the chinchilla spirit. I read that and I just said, that's bizarre to happen on a place like this property, which is well known for extra dimensional type of anomalies, was kind of a little bit eyebrow raising. But I gotta say, I'd rather see a beautiful little shiny gray coated chinchilla than a Bigfoot Sasquatch underneath my snowcat chassis. And the message was really pretty powerful. Was basically, this is blessed. You're on the right track. Just don't forget what you've been taught about this property for over two decades. And that was the message. It came through loud and clear to my dream state. So, I mean, chalk it up. I could write a book. I have a chapter called Chilling with the Chinchilla. I tell you, I had two witnesses. I saw it. My two friends saw it. I shared with them what the website showed, you know, what a chinchilla dream is all about and the symbolism. I got to say, it's pretty exciting to me. If it's extra dimensional, well, would a chinchilla come? What would you think about it if you saw it? I don't know what I thought. I said, well, that's a little rodent. He's pretty bold, and he sits there and acts like, you know, he wants me to take him home type of thing. Very friendly and didn't seem to be put out at all and be afraid like a rat would be or something, or a mouse. No, I just sat there and just like, here I am, chip, 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 just talking to me. It's a pretty amazing little thing. So, Kevin, are we all going crazy? Are we hallucinating on chinchillas in Utah? I mean, it's insane, right? Tell me I'm crazy.
I don't crazy. I think you should listen to everything, especially dreams. I mean, who's to tell you that that's... Listen, I mean, science exists because we don't know everything.
I'll put it that way. Let's put it that way.
Very, very have, well said again. Yeah, exactly.
Have fun.
And science really is exploring, trying to make answers out of the unexplained mysteries. Is it not?
Yeah.
There's more and more people waking up to so-called, they call themselves flat earth. I don't like that term. Alex and I talked about it. I said, I like to call it biblical cosmology. Whether you believe in the Bible or not, that's another debate. But the Bible is a flat earth book, let's be honest. I mean, just the firmament, this clearly says many places in the Bible that the earth is non-moving. We call it terra firma in Latin. That means unmoving earth, terra firma, never moves. But NASA says, oh, we are. We're spinning 1,000 miles per hour at the equator. And we're hurtling 72,000 miles an hour through deep, dark space. Maybe. But I don't see it. Okay. The point is, there was there's a Facebook page and it's growing. It's a Christian debate on flat earth. You know, is it real? This type of thing. It's kind of an interesting little website. But they got one that a person posted, well, what about the science of Newton and the law of gravity that explains how water stays on a spinning globe? I had to submit. I says, you know, the facts about Sir Isaac Newton, the fact it was he had a fetish for top hats. But people don't realize this. But he bought a new top hat once or twice a week. He just had a fetish for it. He could afford it. He was crowned as given knighthood by the Queen, Sir Isaac Newton. He loved his fancy top hats. The problem is, the top hats were all made and manufactured with mercury. So you put the brand new mercury-laden top hat, it goes into your brain, and you become a mad hatter. You look for things that aren't there. So he's sitting under the tree in a mercury-induced stupor, and an apple falls on his head. Boom! Oh, so he dreams up gravity. No, it's the density of the object based on the O2 air density. Simple. You have helium in the periodic table, which is lighter than O2 couplet oxygen. It's going to rise. It doesn't defy gravity. It just rises above the O2 atmospheric pressure. Same with, you know, why a feather will fall slower because it's less dense than a lead ball from the Empire State Building. It's density versus O2 oxygen, which has a molecular weight of 18. Folks, simple. So I posted this on this, and people just didn't get it. They say, well, I don't understand what you're saying. Fine, let's just, don't worry about it. Either you see it or you don't. There's no gravity, Mr. Newton. Mr. Mad Hatter, there was a documentary I saw the author of Through the Looking Glass. He modeled the Mad Hatter and the Tea Party that Alice went through the Looking Glass. The Mad Hatter was actually Sir Isaac Newton. He was mad, but they seemed to make him out like he was sane. Mad Hatter. Anyway, you know, when you observe things, like you said, Kevin, and science explains it, you got to be grounded in reality. You know, you can write out a hundred figure boson explanation of black holes and defying gravity and the laws of thermodynamics, how something as heavy as a jet airplane can rise in the air. That's all. Fact of you can use air to lift and fly, but it's not really defying gravity. It's the laws of thermodynamics. But just get in a hot air balloon one time in your life and watch them heat up that air. When you heat up oxygen, you know, the O2 turns into singlet oxygen and loses electron mass. It becomes lighter than the surrounding cooler O2. Fact. That's why hot air rises. See, nothing nothing magical or mystical about a hot air balloon. Or you can just pump in helium and a big bunch of party balloons and fly off to Oz if you want to, right? The world is, like you said, the meme earlier, Kevin, the meme of somebody charging the electric vehicle with a freaking gas generator. Yeah, I guess it takes all sources. He might have been in an emergency. Let's give him a break, shall we?
Yeah. Well, I understand. I looked briefly at I don't know if it was the official site, but some of the folks that are going to be speaking over there, and there's some of the people are also talking about treasure and lost things. And
very
that's
much
a,
so.
Rife. That's a place rife with history. What's some of that? What are some of the people talking about that?
Well, yeah, there's a lot of old Spanish history here, but it goes even deeper than the Spanish. The Spanish came searching for the lost cities, the seven cities of Cibola. But the Spanish were in here well before the official history books say. They say officially that it was Fathers Escalante and Dominguez in missions coming to convert the Indians in 1776. Well, that's still plenty long. That's about when we declared the Declaration of Independence. But no, the fact is the Spanish under Cortez and then Pizarro, the conquistadores, were here well in the, you know, soon after Columbus. In the early 16th century, the 1500s, and they did a good job of enslaving the Indians to seek after the one thing that they wanted, gold, the yellow metal. And so as they conquered Montezuma and his massive gold, well, they wanted to find out where he got the gold. You made all these golden artifacts, these golden sun discs, the solar discs, the Aztecs did all of this metallurgy. Where was your source? All of them talk about their source being the mythical, to them, the story of their Aztecs came from Aztlan. And all of them was saying, we followed the trail south to Mexico by following, looking for a symbol, but we came from the land, from the mountains to the north. And that all the trail, the ancient llama trails, point to our property that we're working here in Utah. Believe me, the history is amazing. And we have uncovered artifacts that are Aztec in nature. There's no question about it, Kevin. We're sitting on something very special. And that's why, you know, while you were here, I would like to have shown you what we're doing, because it's an amazing story, and you cannot make this up. And you know, I have equipment to scientifically, again, show you the energy fields that are here. This is a real deal. Okay, and I'll just say this on the record, my limited partner that I came in, he was the third partner in the deal with me, and he did pay money to help purchase the property, but he went rogue basically and made a deal with Discovery Channel, and they did a filming called Mystery of Blind Frog Ranch. That's my property. That's my property that I brought to Mr. Olinger. And he came partner with me. And we're in a lawsuit. I can't discuss a lot of it because of the legal problems. But it's very real. Discovery Channel thought it was enough to make a show out of. And the problem, frankly, is it's nonsense because they're bringing in green screen tactics. They're making things that just don't fit to make it almost like woo-woo, Skinwalker Ranch type of nonsense. They can tell the whole story correctly. It's a true history. I keep telling people that they seem that this is a Discovery Channel, Mystery of Blind Frog Ranch is quite an amazing show. They don't ask themselves, how was it that a guy from Dumas, Texas, who's in the oil field business, happens to find out about this special property that's way off the beaten path, in the semi-wilderness area of Utah? Who brought this to you, Mr. Olinger? Please explain that.
But people didn't ask that, you know, they don't look deeper than the storyline. And that's my big problem. The media, whether it's reality TV, they play hard and fast with the truth. And you know what that's called, Kevin, in my book? Wire fraud.
Hmm.
I mean, they did it with the COVID nonsense. They're doing it with this property. It's too precious and too big. It really is. It's world changing. I mean, world, continent changing. It's that big of a story. And I can't say it. I usually can't talk too much about it. My attorneys will yell at me. But, you know, we have a pretty good legal team now. And we're going to ask the Discovery Channel some pretty hard questions here. This is not a naked and afraid type of thing, right? This is reality TV. We're going to make it real. Can't just come and play loose and just because you have millions, if not billions, of dollars at your disposal. Enough. Lying media, stop. Stop it. Tell the truth for once. That's my soapbox tonight, guys. So, yeah, the people coming to this are treasure hunters. More than that, they're seeking for lost things. They're seeking for truth is really what they're all about. This is why they come here and learn things. And in the meantime, you get to meet new folks. They're all, I mean, for the most part, I think they're really honest, good-hearted people that just want to know the truth. And so they think I have a story to tell, so I'm going to tell them what I know about the Grand Canyon tomorrow night.
Oh, that's great.
I'm going to show them pictures, too, you know. I got some great, great photos. The story is going to be fun.
Excellent.
It'll be videotaped. I'll get a copy. I hate watching myself. I don't know. I guess we're all our worst critics, but some people might think it's cool just to see the story. I'll see if I get you a copy.
Yeah, I appreciate that.
So, anything you want to just wrap up with? We're almost out of time here.
No, I was keeping an eye on things with the news. I'm catching up myself. I was on a plane for a while. But, it's cracking up to be a pretty fantastic week. I don't know if that's in a good or bad sense, but it'll be very entertaining, to say the least. We've got so many things happening on so many fronts. Now, the big story that I just saw, which is regarding politics, is that we've got some of these what they call suspicious activity reports that are all of a sudden. Now, this is pretty interesting. You get one or two of these every few years. And apparently there were something like hundreds of these, or over 100, that were filed, SARs. And I'm looking at one right now that J.P. Morgan Chase filed one against, and it's related to human trafficking. And they're filing it against Robert Hunter Biden and his law firm, Owasco, and that's not the only one. Wells Fargo, another one regarding human trafficking. And they had, there's payoffs in the hundreds of thousands here. And it's odd. There's like equal amounts that seem to be getting paid. And not only that, but you've got these women that are also in there that are receiving money. Like $5,000, $7,000, and they're Ukrainians and Russians. So now I'm suspecting that those are all people that they're all young. This one was born a student, born in 1995. And these are transactions that took place in 2019. Okay, this is not really old stuff. So it looks like a lot of this human trafficking money has been going through the Ukraine, and he's personally, his companies and his attorneys are doling this money out to these individuals who are young Russian and Ukrainian women. Of course,
they're not the drug trafficking out of Colombia, or the drug kingpins. Like, I was so disappointed in that nonsense sound of freedom.
I mean, it wouldn't surprise me if they were involved in drugs. I mean, they're worse than the worst. I mean, these people are
the big pipeline is coming from, not from the cartel of South America. I'm just sorry. Oh. It's much bigger. And that's what seems to be coming out here. That's good.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, this is stuff that they're setting up, and it appears that he's using these people to open up shell companies and all sorts of remitted to Oksana, so and so from the Ukraine. I can send you a link, or you all, there's a section. I'm going to update it about 5 minutes after the show. We'll be updated over at jiffy.news. You can link in over there. And this is, of course, stuff that's coming through Marco Polo. So we're keeping everybody abreast of the situation here, and I don't think we're going to see the end of it. They can sweep a bunch of stuff under the carpet, but this is getting bad. No wonder they want to bury movies like The Sound of Freedom.
No kidding. Kevin, thanks for the updates. Jiffy dot news, ladies and gentlemen. Just like Jiffy, like the peanut butter, dot news. Check it out. Thanks, Kevin. Keep up the good work. Keep your powder dry. How's James doing, real quickly? Is he doing well? Is his heart okay?
Yeah, doing great. I just, I don't know. Yesterday was.
Be well, ladies and gentlemen. Thanks for listening. See you next week. God bless you. Bye-bye.
Listening to Revolution Radio. Revolution Radio every Wednesday 8 p.m. Eastern Time on Studio B for Momentary Zen with host Zen Garcia at freedomslips.com, the People Station.
This is Thomas, a.k.a. a Mad Painter. I'd like you to join me Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time for Open Canvas. Don't forget to bring an open mind.
Yes, folks, that's right. Bring an open mind to an open canvas. Again, that is Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern. UFOs to government corruption. This is Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. You don't need to expect us. We're already here.
We did not engage in conflict that was out of line with our mission.
Is it disloyal? Is it sedition? Is it treason to oppose the hands of tyranny? Never!
I will never send troops anywhere on a mission of that kind without telling them that if somebody shoots at them, they can darn well shoot back.
I know not what cause.